Hi, is this the psychic EMT class?
Yep.
Am I in the right place? Are you sure?
Stop. Hopefully you
get yourself. No, he doesn't have to stop yet.
I know.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Welcome to Psychic EMT, or what to do when somebody actually has one of those situations where, in ritual or otherwise.
Hi, Mom.
I was going to say my TARDIS is not appearing, so there is
that. You know? Hello, Time Lord, where are you? Yes, it was my mother. Pardon me for a moment.
Don't put her on speaker.
Let me mention that.
Not nice.
Psychic EMT class, how can I help you? Okay, bye. Right, you go back on vibrate. So as I was saying, this is a class of what to do when things go horribly wrong. There are a lot of things out there that can hurt a person, such as being in a ritual, for example, from one of the classes that I took this weekend, where you have a guided meditation. And somebody actually says, oh, well, I already know the landscape of where we're going. I'm going to go wander off on my own. And the guided meditation is brought back, and the person's like, okay, I'm coming back now. Give me a few moments, I'll be there. And all of a sudden, the leader of the ritual and everybody else is going, oh my God, the person's not responding. What do we do? Well, the example that was given in the class was everybody gave this poor person grounding energy. It helps if you know what's going on with the person first. Don't always assume you know. That is the worst possible thing you could do to somebody. For instance, if I was in a guided meditation and somebody hadn't come back yet, and everybody was going, grounding energy, grounding energy, grounding energy, I'd be like, excuse me. If the person is going to the underworld, which you took us to, and you're grounding them, that's pushing energy back down. And they're trying to climb up from the underworld. This, to me, does not make sense. Why are you doing that? In other words, you should be calling them back up. Don't push them back down. Call them back up. So let's let them do what they need to do. Because, you know, some people take a little longer than others to come back from things. You know? So always, always, always check before you do something as to what that person's condition is. You know, say somebody comes out of a ritual and they're walking around dazed. I'm not walking up to that person and go, are you all right, ground? Because they may have been going, I'm hungry. Or something may have come in and gone, we're going to go for a walk and play. And if I come in and go, are you all right? That thing's going to look at me and go, your food. Because I have decided to put myself in a position where I have disrupted whatever this thing is doing. Or this person. Always ask and don't touch. Are you okay? Do you need help? Perfect example. Jane Sibley does Norse workings on a regular basis. People get overloaded really quickly. If you walk up to the person and go, are you okay, and you're not ready to ground, you're getting zapped with that same energy. Walk up to the person and go, hey, you okay? You're looking a little kind of dazed. You need help?
I'm good.
That's a perfect good response. If they go, huh? Then you say, can I help you?
You're shiny.
Why don't we come over here and have a sit down and we'll talk, get you something to eat, get you back to where you should be. Okay? That is a perfectly respectable answer and a perfectly responsible answer. Don't just go up, oh, hey, hi, how you doing, ground? For one thing, if I'm having a moment, I'm going to punch you.
No, literally.
No, it will be a literal punch. Because, you know, if I'm sitting there and I'm communing with my deity, and my deity is for whatever reason going, we're wandering this way. We want to be away from everybody else. And you come up and go, you're looking dazed and confused, and I'm going to ground you. My deity may get to you before I do, but only by a fraction of a second. Always, always, always check. Find out if they know who they are, where they are, when they are. It's a perfectly good example. Hey, how are you? Do you know who you are? What's your name?
Michelle.
Do you know where you are?
Yeah.
Good question. Or good answer. Who's the president of the United States? Not who do you want to be the president of the United States.
Obama.
Okay. Had she not been able to answer any of those questions, I'd be like, okay, do you need some help? Because you're kind of looking confused there. If the person sits there and gives you all of those answers and they're still looking pale, have you eaten recently? When?
An hour and a half or so ago.
Okay. Had she not said an hour and a half ago or so ago? Let's go to the con suite, get you something to eat. Food is a wonderful grounding. If she sits there and she says hour and a half and she's still looking pale and confused and dazed, you can touch her and attempt to ground. If that doesn't work, there's something else going on there and you need to find out what it is. Hey, what were you doing earlier? Because you're looking kind of dazed and confused. So, did you go to something? Are you okay? You feeling all right? Okay. That's a perfectly acceptable answer. Keep an eye on them, because if they pass out, you know they weren't okay. But if they're able to say, I'm okay, nothing you're allowed to do. If they sit there and go, huh? What? Who are you? What are the pretty ribbons for? You can say, you're not doing okay. Let's go over here and get you some help. We have a bunch of healers here. What a psychic EMT does is immediate first response to a problem. For instance, somebody wandering out of ritual being confused and dazed. Your first response is going to be to rush over there and help. Well, your first response is correct. However, just like everything else, you have to have consent of the person. Ethically and legally, I am not allowed to do anything magically to that person until that person says, yes, you can help me. For instance, if somebody was in a trance and they purposefully went into that trance and then they came out of the trance and they're wandering around half tranced, I'm not going to pull them out of that trance. I'm going to walk up to them and go, you're not all here. Do you need help coming back? If a person says no, keep an eye on them. Person says yes. All right, what's your name? Megan? No, Michelle. Sorry. Well, Michelle, let's go talk. Okay? Constantly use the person's name. So, Michelle, how are you doing? Can we go get you something to drink, Michelle? Can we get you something to eat, Michelle? The simple act of calling their name is going to help them come back faster than going, oh my God, we need to ground you. Yes, I'm a diva. Says, all right, here. Oh my God, we need to ground you. That could be the worst possible thing you could do for somebody in a trance. The very worst thing. Because if they're out there in the ethers and they're only partially back and you decide, okay, it's time to ground you, you slam them back in their body, they're going to be worse off because they have no idea at that point where you are and they are, where they are, what happened, and why are you sitting there over them going, are you okay now? And they're more than likely going to do what I would do. Wham! What'd you do? There are things, and I covered this in my Nightmare and Demons class, there are things out there that will find you tasty and try to chomp on you. There are things out there that will find everybody else in this room tasty and will try to chomp on you. If you get chomped on and I see that you're hemorrhaging magical energy or what have you, I'm not going to run up and go, oh my God, are you all right? I'm going to say, how you feeling? I'm kind of run down, I'm tired, and I got this pain right here, but I don't know why. Did you go do something where something might have gotten a hold of you or something? Because, you know, you got this great big hole right there. And it looks kind of nasty. If the person sits there and goes, I have no idea what happened. All right. Let's get you somewhere where we can sit you down and get you some help. It might be that the person was at a conference very similar to this one, where there were not so nice things around and might have gotten chomped on. You can ask them, would you like me to help you with that hole? If they say yes, go for it. If they go, what hole? Hey, what were you doing and where were you? Let's cover where you were, what was going on, and see if we can figure out what exactly happened. Because, you know, it's not normal for somebody to have a hole blown in the side of their aura. And you got this right, great big one. You have to get their consent. If not, whatever attacked them may feel you interfering and go, you're just as tasty as they are. And if you have more energy, you're even more tasty than they are. Chomp, chomp, chomp. Yes.
Well, would they do that even if you had consent?
They would.
But you have more protection.
But because you have more protection, because whenever you have consent, whoever is up there looking out after fools and EMTs and firefighters is going to look at you and go, see that thing over there that's looking at you going, you're tasty. You might want a shield. And you'll feel your body go, that's not normal. And half the time, if you're intelligent about it and you have the subconscious shielding going on, like I do, your shields will come into play and cover both of you. Because you have the implied consent, or the actual consent, you can cover the other person in your shields and bring them into your protection while you work on them. Yes? I knew you were going to ask.
I'm asking many things. So if we're using the analogy of EMT...
Uh-huh. Which we are.
That makes you a first responder.
Uh-huh.
It does not make you a trauma surgeon.
Exactly.
So if it's out of your depth, what's your suggestion?
You find somebody who you trust, who you know can actually handle psychic wounds. Find your nearest high priest or high priestess and go, I got a problem! Help! Do not be afraid to sit there and go, ooh, 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 Mr. High Priest, Mrs. High Priestess, I am out of my depth. Because, yes, the gods do like people who have courage, but they also look at the ones who are being stupidly courageous and go, I got nothing for you. I will do my best to keep that thing off of your back because you're stupid. At least you were smart enough to get consent. So, you know, these are the things that you have to think about. If you're in a ritual and you are asked as, I want to say Richard, Kirk said, and you're the person outside the ritual who's watching the ritual, watching for the person who sits there all of a sudden in the trance and goes, bleh, or who just completely freaks out. Do not go, I got this! Walk over calmly and say, hey, I noticed that you're having a problem. Do you need to leave the circle and collect yourself, and then we can come back and you can join us again? Or do you feel like you can stay right here? Can I help you to get up so that we can go for a little walk, get your energies collected again? Because you're looking kind of dazed and confused.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Uh-oh.
Means I am too out of it to really know what the hell you're asking. Can I help you?
Can you?
That means right there, I have implied consent. Okay. Because the person is so confused, they don't know what is going on at this point. The fact that they said, can you help me? Even though they phrase it as a question, means I can now help this person. Let's go for a walk. Come on. Take them out of the sacred space, wherever you have to go. Sit them down. Calm them down. Get them back to their shelves. Ask them their name. If they can't tell you their name,
you have a bigger problem.
A much bigger problem. Because if you don't know their name, you're screwed. So you go to the person who they were sitting next to, or actually you send somebody who was going, who they were sitting next to ask if they know the person. If nobody knows who that person was.
Was being the operative word.
Was being the operative word. Because at this point, they don't know who they are. And you can make a very horrible mistake by assuming it's somebody else's name. You sit there and go, what do you remember? Can you tell me anything you remember about yourself? And you start bringing them back slowly, getting them to remember who they are. Yes.
Just another secondary thing. You can also place some serious observations about that person.
Oh, yeah.
Are they wearing a wedding ring? Do they have what jewelry is on their neck?
Exactly.
You can ask them about pieces that they're wearing. You know, who gave you that?
Who gave you that? What's the cane for?
Okay.
Yeah. What's the cane for? The cane will make them focus on the cane, which will remind them something about themselves. Why can't I walk without a cane? Let me think about that.
Why am I wearing glasses?
Why am I wearing glasses? Can I see without them?
Yes.
You know, if the answer is yes, then okay, you're wearing them for affectations. Good for you. But why are you wearing them for affectation? Because they make me appear smarter. I looked at the person and I went, I'm glad you feel that way. I've got nothing for you.
That is a teenager thing.
Yes, as a matter of fact, it was. And mommy and daddy brought the teenager who was 13 to ritual. And it was a strong ritual.
I was going to say, that's okay if the ritual is family-based.
No.
If it's not, then you have an issue.
And mommy and daddy dropped kid off.
Oh, that's a no-no.
It gets better. Dropped kid off, said, go enjoy the ritual. We're going to go help in the kitchen. Nobody knew where to find mom and dad.
Because he didn't remember.
Because he couldn't remember. God dang thing. Kitchen was off-site.
So
here I am going, okay, so you're wearing glasses because they're affectations. Your mom and dad aren't here because ain't nobody seen your mom and dad recently because I've already asked around. You are 13, which I already have a problem with. You don't know who you are. I cannot legally accept consent from you because you are underage. I can do nothing for you until your parents can be found. The most I can do is be a protective presence, keep all the nasties at bay, and keep him, her, or it, in this case it was a him, from doing anything more stupid. Such as going, oh, look, we're getting skyclad. No, no, Kate, you're keeping your clothes on. There will be none of that coming off.
Blindfold you while everybody else goes skyclad.
We're, see this nice little bench over? Yeah, we're walking over to the bench. Yes, we're walking. Stay. Luckily, Mom and Dad knew when the ritual was supposed to be over. They came back 15 minutes early. My first response was to walk up to Mom and Dad and go, what were you thinking? Instead, I looked at them and I said, your son has a small problem. How small? Between fingers. Well, what's the problem? You see where he's sitting? Yeah. Go ask him who he is. Don't use his name. Just ask him who he is. Okay. What's your name? Huh? That's a normal response for him. Ask. Do you know who you are? No. Who are you?
Oops.
I'm your dad. Really? I walked over to him and said, he's all yours. My job is over. Because the responsible adult is now there. I no longer have to take care of his stupidity. Now, if he comes to me and says, hey, I need help because I don't know what to do, I will come over and do what I can.
And when you say he, you mean the father.
The father.
Thank you.
Or the mama.
Yes.
Because before I got 5 feet, the mom came up to me and goes, what do you do in that case? I said, do I have this great big neon sign that says, ask me to help? Where the frick is its off switch? So I did what I normally do, and I walk over and I go, okay, your son obviously has never been in this kind of powerful ritual before, therefore you need to teach him about grounding, centering, and shielding prior to letting him wander around unprotected into these rituals. Meanwhile, because he has been overloaded and we don't know where he is and I don't know his name is Steve. Okay, fine. Hi, Steve. How are you? I'm Larry. Who? We'll get into that later, kid. Do you know that your name is Steve? I think so. Well, that's better than you were doing a little while ago. We have hope. I was able to bring him back to himself. It took about a good half hour and me looking at Mom and Dad and going, I need something for him to eat that is meat-based unless he is a vegetarian or you all are vegans. In which case, bring me tofu. I'm not touching the tofu. Bring me cheese. I don't care if you don't eat cheese. Bring me the frickin' cheese. And bring me something that is water-based for him to drink. Well, why water-based? He drinks sodas normally. I don't care what he drinks normally. Bring me the frickin' water. And a little bit of salt. Salt is a wonderful thing. It is an electrolyte, which means that, one, if he hasn't eaten in a while and his electrolytes have been thrown off because a 13-year-old puberty boy has been thrown into a ritual that is designed to play Mary Hobb with everybody else's energies, and his is already unstable, we'll sit there and go, oh, look, your energies are all wacky. Let's go like this and straighten them out. Salt is awesome that way. Salt is also a good grounding medium that I don't have to use my energy to go into his muck and go, let's clean you up a little bit.
Hand sanitizer.
It's great for hand sanitizing.
It's going in my quotes.
What, salt is hand sanitizer?
Ouija board equals chainsaw. Sanitizer.
And the food will remind him of the simple fact that he does have a physical body he has to return to. Which is what a lot of people don't understand. When you do get spaced out, your body and your soul and your mind have gone, I'm going in four different directions, even though there's only three of us. Food will remind your body, hey, this shit is tasty. We like this. Where's it coming from? And it will find your body. The soul will go, there's a party going on over there and I haven't been invited. What the hell's going on? Okay. And the physical part of chewing the food will integrate everything together. That is why it is a good grounding medium. Meat, while not something that everybody needs, the simple act of eating meat also reminds your body, your mind, and your spirit of the physical connection. Which is why you will see a lot of vegans who have been trancing out, as Kirk put it, putting their nose face deep into that haunch of pig and snarling at anybody that comes over and tries to get in their way. However, vegans have a slight problem in that their body is no longer used to digesting meat. If you can get them to stop long enough from there going on the pork roast, to slide the pork roast out as you're sliding the tofu platter in without getting your finger bitten off, all the better for you. I don't play those games. That is not my job. That is the high priest or high priestess's job, because guess what? Your vegan is eating meat. Go fix. I may help you on an accident scene. I may help you in an emergency situation. I am not paid to be stupid.
Or fix your own stupidity.
Well, no. I am there to fix your own stupidity, because you may sit there and go, oh, I know what we're doing. La, 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 la. I don't need the shield. All right, I'm going to walk over here. That way, when the nuclear strike hits you, I'm over here and I can watch it happen and then come pick up the pieces. Because anybody who goes into a ritual who has not shielded themselves, at least for your own primary benefit, personal shields, always, is stupid. There are things out there that will sit there and go, I'm going to ride that guy's coattails in and you look tasty because you're not shielded. Nom, 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 nom. Or, even better. Yes, you are always crunching tastes good with ketchup, but even better. You're not shielded. I need a mouthpiece. What do you say when that happens? Oh, shit. I am not a medium. I am what several religions like to call a horse. I will allow the gods to ride my body on occasion. I'm strong enough willed that I can sit there and go, I ain't playing that game right now. There better be a damn good reason you're asking me to. However, if I am stupid enough to go, oh, we're doing a bunny light and foo-foo dance? Let me just take off my shield. And somebody goes, you're unshielded. You're asking for it. Let me step in. Hello, guys. What are you doing? That's my fault. Yes.
However,
pause for effect, if that person doesn't know better.
No. If that happens, mm-hmm. you are at a ritual and all of a sudden somebody is...
knocking on your door?
No.
And kicks you to the back seat?
No. Somebody just got thrown in the trunk of their own body.
Uh-huh.
Did that make any sense?
Yes.
Okay. If somebody just got thrown in the trunk...
Who?
To the gentleman.
Dee steps in, takes possession of consciousness into the...
Let me put it to you this way.
With the person.
Let me put it to you this way. Some of those assholes don't ask.
And by assholes, he means deity.
Deity. It was the trunk.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, it's like driving a car. Sometimes they let you stay in the front seat and see what's going on, and sometimes they kick your ass in the trunk and you're coloring. You have no idea what they're doing.
You're given a coloring book, and they're like, I'll let you out when I'm done. And you're like, okay. Please, God, don't let me say anything that I'm going to get my ass kicked for later.
So my question becomes, what if there is a person who, for whatever reason,
is in the trunk,
how do you deal with that?
If you're not around.
If I'm not around, if you all were dealing with it.
If we were being...
The first thing that you do is you walk up and go... I understand that you need a mouthpiece. However, can you let us have our Megan back? 9 times out of 10, they'll say, well, I've got some things to tell you first. And you can say, I'll make a deal with you. If you're like me, you go, I will let you use my body. Let Megan out. She did not ask for it. I know her. I know that what some of the deities have done. Because I have a couple that do that to me as well. However, they generally sit there and go, we're going to throw you in the... Ooh, you're firmly rooted. Because I feel that hearing come down and I go, flop. Go ahead, rip out Mother Earth. Because I ground real quick. If you see somebody who's all of a sudden not acting like themselves, wandering around, telling people things that they shouldn't have any clue what they're doing, assume that they have been possessed. Do not assume that you need to immediately go get the Catholic priest with spell book big candle going, get out, spawn of Satan! Because they're going to look at the priest and go, burn in your own hell.
That's awesome.
What? I got hurt to smart. Now, what were you saying?
She wasn't saying anything.
Okay.
She said, I'm sorry.
What, get out, spawn into Satan?
So, if you're not going to ask the deity, if you're not going to force the deity out, because really that's kind of egotistical to think that
you're going to be able to force the deity out. Bargaining works much better.
Thing?
What?
Would it be possible to do the same thing that you're doing with the tranced out person?
Yes.
Try to call them back in.
Yes, you can call them back in through the deity. Be very careful.
Come out of the trunk.
Be very careful.
Yeah. Please don't have 30 people surround them and try to ground them out either.
Deity does not like it when you get sneaky with them. They actually have a tendency to get very angry when you get sneaky with them, as I'm sure we have all witnessed in our personal lives. If I can do this, it might not get noticed. Right.
The fact that you thought that makes it already a failure.
If I do this, maybe I can do this later to appease them. They're already sitting there going, oh, no. There will be no appeasement. Atoning? Maybe. Are you all right?
I'm fine.
Can I help you?
I had a question and then it just like went that way.
I'm sure it did.
I'll ask him later. It's back.
Alrighty then. So when you're dealing with somebody who has been taken over, yes, ma'am.
What if it's not a deity?
What if it's not a deity?
Yes, there
are, and I was getting ready to get to that. If it is a deity, you can try to bargain with it, and it may sit there and go, no, I don't want her to know this, because that has happened before. The person who gets thrown in the metaphysical trunk of the car does not need to know what deity is telling everybody else.
See, now I'm curious. What did I say?
Not going to tell you. Wait. Hold on. Hey. Click. They may tell you, I will let them out when I am done telling everybody what they need to know. It is up to you all as a group whether you tell her after I am gone. Which means... there's a reason I don't want her to know what I'm about to tell you, and if y'all are stupid enough to tell her, that's up on you. To which my response goes, okay, you have just given me the cosmic gag order. Gotcha. They'll tell their message. 9 times out of 10, they'll be nice about putting the person back into the driver's seat. There is that 1 time in 10 where they sit there and go, okay, here you go, wham! And the person's sitting there going, the fuck just happened to me? And you go, hi, I'm Larry. I'm holding you up because you just got ridden like a horse. If it is not deity, and you will be able to tell, you can say, did this vessel give you permission to enter? If the vessel did not give you permission to enter, then you need to leave the body. If it's not deity, you can call on deity to go, Mama, Dada, kick it out. Because I'm not stupid enough to get into a contest of wills with somebody who just took somebody else over. Okay, I will call on my mom and dad and go, excuse me, adult supervision, bad touch. And mom and dad will probably sit there and go, get out. At which point, you have just performed your first exorcism, we a you. There may be a negotiation back and forth between the deity and whatever has taken over, and whatever has taken over may be there for a reason, may be a messenger. However, comma, plus for effect, that does not mean that they have the right to go, you're in the turn. I'm taking over, and no, I didn't ask. With a deity, I cannot argue with, well, I can argue with them because I do it on a regular basis. But with a deity in somebody else's body, the best I can do is bargain. If it's something else entirely, yes, I will get into a contest of wills with it and try to kick it out. However, that is a more advanced thing than going, you're tranced and okay, somebody's taking you over. There's nothing I can do to stop that right now because that does not fall under EMT. That falls under him. Yes. Your question.
I was just that under the deity, like someone's, you know, if someone's like, for example, dedicated to Frey, and suddenly some other deity they have no connection to, asking, you know, did you get the?
Did you get deity? That patron deity's permission to do this?
Yeah, like, off of
that is always allowable.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, you're going to be told, "I'm here, aren't I?" Which means either the deity who's there in question is higher on the food chain than the patron deity, or has said, I need to use your acolyte as a messenger. Do you mind?
So
And there are some deities out there that just don't know how to ask the person, hey, can I borrow you? They just go, I need you. And before you can say, okay, they're throwing you in the trunk or the back seat. They're like, I would have said yes. Coming out of something like that can be very disorienting. Like I said, 9 times out of 10, the deity is very nice and calmly puts you back in the driver's seat. However, if they have somewhere that they gotta go and they don't have time to be nice about it, they're going to screw you up mentally and physically for at least a good half hour. Which is when the psychic EMTs come into play and go, hi, let's get you someplace where we can give you some food and some rest and, you know, give you some water and give you some energy to play with because, well, yeah, you're going to be drained. Best energy stuff that I have found around heals a multitude of sins and wounds and emotional outbreaks, especially if somebody is female, is chocolate. It is a wonder food. It gives forgiveness for a lot of things.
Mm. I found a good cookie at Key Bars, the sweet and salty nut bars, unless they have an allergy of nuts.
No. Chocolate is better.
They have chocolate.
Okay.
Take fives.
Take fives are awesome. Snickers are good. Snickers are packed full of vitamins and minerals and meat, even though the meat is peanut. And at the same time, even though it's not my fault, I am male, therefore it is automatically my fault. I've come to accept this. If I approach with a chocolate bar, I am instantly forgiven. Chocolate is awesome. Or wait. Or as you put it up here in New England, wicked awesome.
Pizza.
There you go, wicked pizza.
Awesome. Where are you from?
I am actually, originally I was born in Michigan, and we moved around a great deal. I have been to California, to Texas, to Louisiana, to Maryland, and I'm back in Maryland. So, trying to place my accent is not going to work, because I have a multitude of accents, including an Irish brogue on occasion, but we'll get into that later, maybe. So, getting back to the possession and coming out of the possession. If something else has come in and taken up residence and leave, they don't always know how to put somebody back in the driver's seat. So you may get somebody who's sitting there stuck in the trunk or in the back seat, or even worse, sitting in the passenger seat when all of a sudden you're going 120 miles an hour down the road and the driver disappears. Yes.
You've used a couple of different metaphors. I'm wondering how they're related.
Okay.
On the one hand, you talked about the boy who's ungrounded and his spirit and his soul were going in different directions.
Correct.
And now you're talking about being in the trunk, being in the backseat.
Okay. Being possessed, and the best way to put it is when you are possessed, it is very much like you are in a car. The deity is either going to be in the back seat whispering things in your ear, or in the front seat telling you what to say, or using your voice to say it, or in the driver's seat where they're telling people directly what they need to know. And you are either going to be in the driver's seat, passenger seat, the back seat, or if you're very unlucky, the trunk of the car with the coloring book going, la 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 la. Okay? Which is completely different than being blasted apart in a ritual where you didn't really have a good basis in what was going to be going on, and mommy and daddy did not teach you how to ground center and shield yourself properly.
In the aftermath,
with the person of, there is a big difference. Okay, first, with the child, you need to get them to realize who they are. With the possession, the person already knows who they are. Okay, so you need to bring them back together. The possession, you need to call them back out. Okay. And if they're in the trunk of the car, it's not always easy because they can't always hear you.
So what do you do in that case?
In that case, the easiest thing that I have found to do and it hurts like hell, is to send your energy into that person until you can find their spiritual energy and pull it back out. It is not comfortable for the recipient or the person who's doing it, because I have to wander their metaphysical landscape to find them. And if they're truly hidden somewhere in their metaphysical landscape because the God went, I want them to know nothing, it may take me a while to find them. The best I can do is go, I'm here, come find me. If I can't find them, I can be a beacon for them to come find me. I already have a rope to myself, so I know where I'm going to be going back to. I can pull them with me. However, I don't know where in their mind, body, spirit they have gone to. So all I can do is go, all right, I'm going to be a great big huge beacon of energy for you to find, and I'm going to wander around and hopefully you'll find me or I'll stumble across you. Not exactly comfortable walking around in somebody else's landscape, because you don't know the pitfalls that they have put in their landscape. And all the time, you're calling them by the name that you know them by, because you may not know their given name. For instance, I didn't know her name for a long time, what her given name was. I was introduced to her as Kat. She is Kat. Okay. About a year ago, maybe? No, it was about a year ago. So it was towards the end of fair last year. Somebody came up to me and said, do you know where Megan is? And I went, who the hell is Megan? Oh, she's got another name. What's the other name? What's the other name? What's the other name? And I'm like, I got nothing for you, because I don't know anybody by the name of Megan right now, except for my sister who happens to be in California. So I got nothing for you. And then they were like, oh yeah, she goes by Kat. And I'm like, which Kat?
Who is that?
Because I know about 25 people who go by the name of Kat. Some of them are Kathleen, some of them are Catherine, some of them are Katie's. Which Kat? Emerald Kat. Oh, yeah, she's at work. Well, where's work? Past the food court. Okay. So, I would know her as Kat, so I would call her by Kat. And I would be sitting there in her landscape yelling Kat and hoping that she found me, rather than me going stumble, 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 stumble. Oh, look, a memory trip. Okay, because when you're walking in somebody else's landscapes, you're walking in their memories and their emotions. And if you're even an empath or a slight empath, you're going to get all of their emotions. Yes, but how do you shield yourself while you're in somebody else's landscape looking for them? Yeah, exactly. Yes. And that leaves its own holes in the person, which is why I said, when I do it, it's painful. Yes.
Which works better?
For what?
Given name or the name that they are known by?
That depends. Because I associate you with both names now, my calling for you is going to be using your names and is going to be expressing who you are. If the person, for instance, everybody knows me as Larry or Spawn. Hardly anybody really knows that my name is actually Lawrence. If you come tripping into my landscape going, Lawrence, Lawrence, I'm going to be like, who the fuck's calling that name? I'm not, there were only two people calling me Lawrence, and you aren't either one of them. Go away. I'm going to hide over here, and I got my invisibility screen up. Okay? So, Larry or Spawn. Call me Larry or Spawn, and I'm going to be like, who's calling my name, and what are you doing in my landscape? You know, I will find you and be like, what are you doing? Why are you here? Because you're no longer in your body the way you should be. Looks like my landscape. Now, this is the other thing. When you do find the person, they're going to argue with you because they are in their landscape.
I'm not in the trunk. What are you talking about? I'm just tolerant. I'm not in the trunk. Whatever.
You know? Well, you know, there are people outside who like to see you while we are outside. No, you're not. See the silver cord? Yeah. Ain't yours. What? Ain't yours. It's mine. Let's go back. If they don't want to go back, that is when you have a moral dilemma.
Can you offer them chocolate?
Yes, you can.
Yes. 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 Yes.
Yes, as a matter of fact, you can.
There is a bowl of chocolate.
Yes, you can. Bribing somebody works wonders.
For a steak.
No, no, no. My favorite one for her was, there is a chocolate steak waiting for you.
Chocolate-covered steak is not a bad thing.
Do you know how fast I had to go to keep up with her as she went shooting past me?
Let's go.
She was like, okay, boom. And I'm like, oh, God, this is going to hurt. Call the recall, flam. I'm back in my body just as she's waking up going, chocolate-covered steak?
You lied.
And I'm like, yes, but I have to cook it.
Yeah.
And what was her first words out of her mouth? You lied.
Lied to me.
But it got me where I needed to go with her. You can use bribes to get somebody who has been possessed and is stuck in their trunk back. However, comma, pause for effect. Follow through with your bribes or next time they're not going to trust you. It took me a little while to get a freaking chocolate-covered steak because my housemate was going, you want me to do what with the steak? Dave, I want you to cook a steak and I'm going to cover it in chocolate. That's disgusting. I don't care.
Get her a fondue.
It worked. It worked. I don't care. I had a situation where I had a young woman who was in a workshop for, I think the workshop was labeled Transcendental Spiritual Communication. Now, to this means that I'm leaving my body nice and protected and going up to the spirit world and talking to the spirits. And whoever's leading the workshop is going to make sure that everybody's body stays nice and safe. And that whoever comes back is supposed to be who's coming back into the body. So I'm doing the workshop, and I'm doing the workshop. And I notice that there are things gathering around the workshop space group area thing, and I'm like, those aren't necessarily friendly. I'm going back down. It was nice talking to you. Gotta go. Huh?
I have a neon sign. I have to go.
Yeah, I have a neon sign. I'm going to get help. So I go back down. I enter my body. I look at the workshop leader, and I'm going, I'm used to trance work and I'm getting hungry, so it might be time to start thinking about winding down the workshop. And he's like, oh yeah, we got about 15 minutes. It would be good for everybody to come back now and start getting grounded and, you know, start eating something to make sure that they're not still woozy and they're full of energy before they try to drive home. It's a public store, people. So he starts bringing people back, and I'm watching this one person in the corner because I'm noticing that their energy is going a little wonky, and I'm like, I don't like that little wonkiness in their energy, because I feel energy. I don't see energy, I feel energy. So I'm watching this person, and I'm making sure everybody else gets back and isn't having a problem. When all of this person, and excuse me, I'm going to use some EMT terms here that you all probably don't know, done fall out in the corner and starts dancing in the streets. In other words, passes out and starts going, and I'm like, that ain't normal. So, you got the reference. I love it. I'm watching this kid, and I'm like, okay, and the workshop leader hasn't noticed yet. Because the workshop leader has arranged us in a three-quarter circle around him with people behind him. Okay, in a ritualistic setting where you know that you're not going to be doing a lot of trance work and you know that you're not going to have people behind you, it's acceptable for you to sit there and face this way all the time. However, when you're in a trance workshop, make sure you look behind you at least a couple times. Two things can happen. There can be Big Bag Ubu back there, who's sitting there looking at you going, bring down the circle. In which case you go, in the name of the greater deities I banish you, go away. Or there could be somebody flopping and around and dancing in the streets. So I'm like, okay, that's not a good sign back there, sir. What do you do? Oh my God, what do we do?
That's the worst sign ever.
Who put you in charge of this workshop? Really? So I walk over. I look at this person and I go, hello, are you okay? And if you've ever watched somebody's aura shift, you know as soon as you see their aura shift from going this way to going this way, and the color dynamics go, I feel like taking the 72 Crayola crayon box and going, wee! And watch where they fall. Yeah. This guy's aura was so screwed up that I just went, I don't like that. So what do I get to do about it?
You said you see energy, or you feel energy, you don't see energy. Uh-huh. You talk about seeing the aura.
Seeing the aura is very easy because everybody can see the aura. Everybody can. Even if they can't really see the colors, you can still see the aura. Look at somebody for a while, have them sitting completely motionless, and then you'll notice right along the edges of their body, you'll see an after image develop. That is their aura. Now, I am colorblind. My eyeballs don't see colors. This eyeball goes, the fuck?
Kind of looking like Walt Disney threw up in Technicolor.
Uh-huh, yeah. So I'm like, all right, your colors just went, which is not a good thing.
Using that descriptive language in terms of colors of the aura is most useful in a large group because everybody can relate. I personally don't see the colors. I taste them. And I hear them. And I feel them.
I can see them.
Wow. we run the gambit. Can anybody smell the colors? I really want to know.
So it's a common language, but there are incredibly different ways to sense it.
Perceive and oversimplification.
Yes.
Perceive and correct.
Perceive, that's a much better word. So when you perceive,
go ahead and say see, but you know.
when you perceive the person's aura has just gone completely and totally haywire, like somebody just took the entire thing and threw it in the Molinex and turned it on high speed on, and then threw it back on their body, and you're going, that doesn't look right. That doesn't feel right. And what the hell happened? The worst part is trying to then get that person's aura back in peace enough for you to be able to contact them.
So when you can't get consent, it's okay?
When you cannot get consent, and here's the legal definition of implied consent. The person is incapacitated or in other ways rendered unable to give you implied consent, and they, therefore, it is a reasonable acceptance that they would request help if they knew what was going on. At that point, you have implied consent to help them. If you are in a specific situation where you are able to give help, and it is a reasonably accepted practice to help somebody in that situation, and they are unable to give you help, it is implied consent. If you see somebody, and we're going to use very, very good definitions here for medical reasons, if you see somebody with a great big open hole in their chest and they're bleeding out, and they are unable to give you an answer, it is assumed that they would like you to try to save their life. Therefore, you have implied consent. So let's take it to the metaphysical level. If you see somebody who's sitting there flopping around and their aura has just been Molinexed, and they're not able to answer you, it's pretty positively assumed that they would give you a consent if they were able to. Therefore, you have implied consent. I am not an aura healer. The best I can do is go, that sucks, let's see if we can put the pieces back together enough for me to do something with you and make it you someplace where you can be healed properly. The easiest way to do that, and this is going to be following a Reiki tradition, is combing the aura. Because as long as you can get the aura moving in the same general direction as it was before, it will eventually straighten itself out enough for you to go, hey, are you okay? Can you hear me? It may take you half an hour to an hour. Meanwhile, you should be looking at the person who's running the workshop, who has just gone, oh my God, what do I do? Going, do you know somebody who can heal them? Please say yes, or I'm going to break your kneecaps. Well, you can't really say the kneecap parts, but you can think it awfully loud. Meanwhile, you're combing the energy of this person going, do you know a healer? Because you need one. Because I can only do so much. Once you have gotten the person to where all you can do is support them, start calling them back. Once a person is back in their body, it is amazing what they can do for their own auras. They will straighten out their aura faster than you can. That's if you can get them back into their body. You may have it where you can sit there and clearly feel them hovering right here, and you're going, body kinder, and you want to grab them by the spectral scruff of the neck and shove them in. You're not allowed to. Because doing so would potentially cause them more harm than good. If they're willing to be right here while you're working on them, and you know that they're right here while you're working on them, you can say it would go a lot faster if you would get in your body.
I'll give you chocolate.
I'll give you chocolate. I'll give you steak. Hell, I'll even go to bed with you. Get in your body. I actually had somebody who that worked with, and I went to bed with them. I had my clothes on. I didn't say I'd have sex with them. I said I'd go to bed with them.
I was trying to figure out how to move my body.
Now.
Oh, out.
Yes, chocolate covered bacon works well too. I've been bribed with chocolate covered bacon when I went, that hurt. I don't want to come out of my corner. No, go away. Go away. Go away. There's chocolate covered bacon. No, go away. Let's get her first and you. Okay.
You had started to say that if you can't, before we got onto the bribing people back, if they can't get them to come back, then you have a moral dilemma. And then
you have a moral dilemma if you cannot get somebody to come back. You are not, gray area. You are not allowed to force somebody back into their brain and body.
Technically.
There are special circumstances, such as if you are a parent and your child has decided to go, ain't coming back. I did not raise you to be this stupid. Get in that body. Or as my mother would go, I did not raise you stupid. Get back in there. You, as a parent, it is understood psychically, magically, and legally that you are responsible for the well-being of that child to the age of the majority of consent. Which brings me to another point. Does anybody know what the majority age of consent in Massachusetts is?
16.
Wrong. 14. 14.
That's
14. The majority of consent means at the age of 14, you no longer need your parents' permission to go play the two-bag monster.
12.
Which means that at 14, you are legally considered an adult. Okay? Sexually speaking. You are not allowed to enter a legal binding contract until you are 18. Indeed. There is a movement to make the legal majority age 18 across the board. I'm all for that.
I thought New York was trying to make it 21.
They are, but they don't have nearly the support that 18 does. Which is also why I said, you know what, I stopped counting at 25. And then I realized, well, no, I'm going to stop at 35. Why 35? I can be president at 35. You also are allowed to intercede on the elderly's behalf. Reason being, the elderly do not have a very strong tie to the body anymore. It is assumed, I love the word assumed, that the elderly would want to be back in their body. That's a damn good question. You know, I'll just look at it and go, okay, so you want to get back in there? I can get you chocolate steak. I can get you chocolate covered bacon. What the hell do you want to get back in there? Because you know what? You die on my watch, I'm being pissed. Okay. Once you have reached your legal age, the age of majority, I am no longer responsible for making your decisions. Yes, I've gone over. I cannot force you back in your body if you are over the age of 18.
To your point, the elderly, it's really, 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 really subjective.
Yep.
And it's subjective in every state.
Yes. For instance,
Adult Protective Services, there's this big gray area.
For instance, the elderly is concerned, is legally defined as anybody who has reached retirement age and may not necessarily have the full use of their facilities.
Fact.
Faculties. Thank you. I just used the wrong word.
Facilities are a whole nother deal with the elderly here.
They may not have full use of that either. Okay. Do not have the full use of their faculties. I'm sorry, did somebody hire somebody to work in my head? Because I don't remember the whole team that was supposed to be in my head working because I don't have them anymore. I have a whole bunch of smart-ass commentators out of left field in my head. Yeah, my faculty are commentators.
Now, what if you have a child or an adult who is mentally impaired?
Okay.
Have their legal guardians.
Hold on. If somebody is legally impaired or, as I like to say it, mentally retarded. Yes, I did that perfectly as a dig at you, dear. If they're mentally retarded and they do not function on a level that an adult is assumed to be capable of dealing with, that means that they have, one, a legal guardian. And two, the legal guardian is responsible for that person. Now, should you be that legal guardian, you have every right to say, look, you're getting back in that body or I'm whooping your ass. Okay. So, or you're getting out your corner or I'm whipping your ass. There will be no chocolate steak or chocolate covered bacon. I might give it to you if you come along peacefully, but you're getting out here. Now, there are things that will slash you to pieces. Everybody has, I'm going to assume, and I know that's making a fool out of me and out of everybody else, but I'm going to assume that at least some kind of first aid healing type of thing was taught to everybody. Even if it's nothing more than, I'm giving you energy to do what you need to do with it. Which is enough if the person has a psychic wound to at least put a scab over it or a bandage over it. Okay. You can call it mental band-aids if you want to. That's mostly what we're going to do. That's all we're going to do. The healing should be done by the high priest and the high priestess of the ritual, the leader of the workshop, or a fully qualified healer who looks at them and goes, oh my God, what happened to you? Would you like me to help you with that? You know. Yeah. Yes, please take him off of my hands. I'll let you go. You want to go with that person. Okay. What we do as psychic EMTs is a stopgap measure. We are not meant to be full healers unless you want to be. EMTs are emergency response. We are first response. We are not going to sit there and go,
they are not long-term response.
You need to have trauma surgery. Let's walk you to the OR. Patch. Here you go, doc. Okay. I don't want to look at somebody's innards that intimately. Why? I'm not a trauma surgeon. Okay, I did. Yes, ma'am.
Finish your sentence and then I'll pick up at the end.
I had to do 8 hours of clinicals in the ER and 2 hours in the trauma surgery department. My response to the trauma surgery department was, I'm in my scrubs, there's the window. Oh, look, I can see their bone. I'm going to go be faint now. The sticky red stuff is supposed to stay on the inside. The sticky psychic stuff is supposed to stay on the inside. I can put the sticky red, the psychic stuff back in, and into the inside and patch it up long enough for you to get to a healer. I can put a band-aid to stop you from bleeding out long enough for me to get you to the hospital. Other than that, I don't want to deal with it. Okay? Not my job. Not what I signed up for in this life. Are there any questions about being a psychic EMT that I have not covered? And I know there's a whole lot of stuff that I have not covered.
No,
Yes.
I wanted to add in a note at the end.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
That's what I'm going to make a suggestion, is that going back to the beginning where you're asking someone if they are all right, if uh-huh. they have eaten today,
uh-huh.
another question is, are there any medications you should have taken?
Thank you.
Good
yes.
question.
Are there any medications you should have taken? Because there are people out there who are diabetic and may be off their insulin. Hold on a sec. Did you wanted the final word?
I don't care. It doesn't matter.
Then go ahead and say your bit.
As someone who usually steps in after the first responder and a healer.
She's a nurse.
It's always best if you're running a public circle and you don't know everybody, two things to cover your ass and save mine is a name tag. And with that name tag goes an emergency release.
Oh, damn.
So name, address, emergency contact. If you have a magical name on your name tag, what is your real one? And a consent form that says, if something goes terribly wrong with you, do we have permission to use any measures that we feel would be in your best interest to help you? So therefore, that takes the informed consent
and makes it implied consent.
And makes it implied consent.
So either you sign yourself a DNR or don't sign a DNR.
Mm-hmm. Correct. I am a proponent for the emergency contact and consent forms. Because as an EMT, well, as a former EMT, because I no longer am a current physical EMT.
It still stays in the blood.
Yeah, it still stays in the blood. If I do not have that consent, and I do not, and I cannot get implied consent because you are just with it enough, I'm going to be like, there is nothing I can do.
Yep. And the other side of that, and I know she's like, I wouldn't sign that form. And that brings me to my other point. Before you step into a workshop or a ritual or a circle or anything, you must advocate and educate for yourself.
Uh-huh.
How long have you been doing this? Are you certified? Why are you certified? Why should I trust you to take me somewhere other than my own body? Ding! You must advocate and educate yourself. Just because we are metaphysical people, it does not mean we shouldn't have... You know, you walk into your doctor's office and he tells you, hey, I'm going to perform heart surgery on you. Are you going to go, okay? No.
No, my ass is going to go, excuse me, second opinion.
Where did you graduate in your class? Did you graduate at the bottom and still come through? I mean, you wouldn't take a medical recommendation based on no facts at all.
Correct.
Don't expect you to do the same with
correct. That. You had a question.
So, if somebody, when you, would you consider someone ending up going to the mental hospital as a failure as you as an EMT?
As me as an EMT, no.
Okay. So is that, so how, for example, that's something that might happen to a 13-year-old that you find on the street, right? Somebody finds
yes.
him in this position, he's
yes.
going to end up locked away.
Yes. Somebody who gets locked up into a mental hospital because of something that happened to them, if I did not have control over the situation, there's nothing I can do about that. If they get put into the mental hospital, which is a lot of cases nowadays, because that person had a traumatic experience, a lot of doctors are going to label him as PTSD. And can label him as catatonic PTSD.
Or catatonic schizophrenia.
Or catatonic schizophrenia. Which means the psychologists are going to work to bring him back together. Which, I don't have to be there for that. Okay. If I can bring him back together enough for his parents to deal with him, that's good enough for me. Okay, if I can bring him back together enough for the people who are responsible for healing, my job is done.
Well, when you say that people are responsible for healing, would you consider a psychiatrist or a hospital as one of those persons?